with Joe Martino today. Joe is the founder of CETV, which is one of the leading independent outlets that is documenting and supporting humanity's awakening at this time. Joe's TED Talk on how to change your life has inspired many, and he has created three films, Collective Evolution 1, 2, and 3, demonstrating a new, decentralized, and truly sustainable way of being. Joe, welcome to the 5G Summit.
Yeah, thank you for having me. You know, appreciate you doing this summit right now. I think it's an important thing that a lot of people are asking a lot of questions about, and it's good to be talking about it.
Right on. Well, you guys have a huge Facebook following. You have been documenting both the big picture and the science, you know, dot connecting between the two, really helping our generation, and in particular, I think the millennials really, you know, wake up to a lot of what's happening both on the inner consciousness journey and also in, you know, different things in our world, such as wireless and harm. I'll just put it to you. You can answer it any way you like, but let's just dive in here. How do you see 5G?
Yeah, I mean, 5G is, you know, the way we talk about a lot of things here at Collective Evolution is, you know, looking at what happens in our outside world, what happens in our external world, and seeing what about us as humans is creating that or allowing that to be, i.e., here we have a technology that has not been tested properly. There's already a number of signs that illustrate very, very clearly that electromagnetic frequencies, radio frequencies, and so forth have an impact on humans in a negative way, right? We already see that even with a lot of the technologies that exist today. So here we are, we're now going to another level with intensity of these technologies, yet there's no safety testing, and it's a multi-billion dollar industry that we're about to just lay out, you know, across humanity and kind of do so at a hasty process, at a hasty pace, such that no one can really kind of ask questions or figure out what's going on, right? We do this under the guise of the economy. So what does all of that reflect about us, right? That's, so when I say, or when you ask the question, how do I see 5G? I see 5G as this technology that's being rushed to market that exemplifies a state of consciousness, a state of being that humanity seems to be operating from, which is we care more about industry, economy, and business than we do about how those decisions may affect the very nature of who we are, and whether it's our health, whether it's our disconnection from one another and so forth, you know, we just don't seem to be asking those questions. We're like, well, all in the name of business, all in the name of sort of technological progress, right? So that's kind of how I see from a big picture perspective 5G right now.
And so I just want to like be clear. I mean, you're not like a technophobe by any means, right?
No.
I mean, you're so I remember though seeing that, you know, a couple of years ago when you and I were chatting, you were telling me at your office, you kind of had a policy about people, you know, disconnecting from their cell phones, right? Like turning them off and like putting them somewhere where they're not interfacing with that technology when they're trying to be productive. Maybe let's dive into that. Like how technology can be amazing in its support of human creation in our world, but it can also be a system to slowly enslave, which is one of the concerns that I have about 5G and its how it's linked to artificial intelligence, Internet of Things, you know, going into transhumanism by the look of it. So, how can we find that balance? How do you see that tension that the rapid evolution of technology in our world poses to humanity?
Yeah, I mean, the best way that I like to approach this question when people ask me or when you know, it comes up in like a comment online, whether it's Instagram, YouTube, whatever it may be, right, is people will say, you know, if it wasn't for social media, people wouldn't have these, say, mental challenges with themselves and the way they view themselves, right? The mental illness that's associated with that. If it wasn't for cell phones, you know, we wouldn't have this unhealthy addiction to technology and so forth. It's because of the cell phone. It's because of the technology. And to me, it's like, well, hold on a second. We're acting as though humanity doesn't have within the very nature of who we are, this ability to make decisions, right? And to be independent of even, you know, manipulation, if you will. So like what I mean by that is, yes, advertising or marketing or, you know, Facebook, for example, has used tactics, right? And that we've seen various people who work at these companies come out and say this. They've used tactics that are designed to prey on people's, whether it be mentality or psychology or however they operate, right? So as to get them addicted to something. But with greater awareness of self and with greater awareness of what you're doing in your physical reality, you know, those things don't have to affect you. So we kind of exist in this state where we want to blame something else when really it's really about us, right, at the end of the day. And so when I, you know, look back at, okay, well, how did we at Collective Evolution decide how we go about technology or decide how we do things? Well, say technology, computers, laptops, Wi-Fi, so forth, are a tool by which we are allowed to or able to communicate our message across to many, many, many people. Technology, just like money, is not inherently evil. It's the way we use it, or it's our lack of self-responsibility that makes it seem that way. And I say that very, you know, seem that way in quotations or in bold, because it's like, that's simply a perception, right? And so the way we like to use technology, or why we initially tried a no phone policy, was not policy in the sense of you couldn't use your phone. It's just we were trying to create distance between having the phone there constantly, not only as a potential distraction, so now you can be aware of like how often you start going, oh wait, let me check my phone, oh hold on, let me check my phone, okay, let me check my phone, you know, be aware of that. But also at the same time, just from a basic biological health perspective, you know that the increase of electromagnetic radiation, it's like a cumulative thing. If you already have Wi-Fi going, plus, you know, 8 or 9 cell phones in one small area because of the amount of people that are there, it just increases that amount, right? So for us, it was just about, you know, again, looking at the totality of something. Yes, this thing's here as a tool, sure, and this is a deeper discussion, but sure, that tool could have been designed such that it didn't interfere as much with the biological human body or even biology outside in nature, right? It could have been designed in a different frequency range, but this is what we're dealing with. So let's do our best to kind of become aware of that and just go from there. But it's not technology's fault. You know, technology's there to assist. It's just how are we using it and how are we designing it?
Yeah. What is that quote, Joe? It's something like when an unstoppable, an irresistible force meets something unstoppable. Like there's bound to be fireworks. Do you know how that quote goes?
Yeah, an unstoppable force meets an immovable object or something like that. What happens?
Yeah. So that, I feel like that's what's happening here at this time with 5G, right? So we have trillions of dollars that are set to be made by industry. You know, we have even the FCC, as everyone probably knows, just to recap. 2016 FCC Chair Wheeler, who's a telecom industry career man, basically says there's tens of billions of dollars to be made, and we're not going to wait for the standards. We're not going to do the testing. We're just going to open it up. And now the conversation is like around the Trump administration. We have to beat China. We have to beat China. We have to win the 5G race, and we're making this about competition. Just to get back to that quote, though, with all of this, you know, money on the line for the sake of profit and control versus, you know, the power is within each of us, right? We can collect individually and collectively come together. We have the power to change our world. Greater is the power that is within you than the power that's within the world. The tension between those two seems to be amping up huge right now, right? So it's kind of like getting off the fence time, perhaps, from my perspective. How do you see that? Do you also see the tension amping up? And as a result, what are you seeing in the generation as we're becoming face to face with some of these situations like 5G?
Absolutely. You know, it's interesting because there's a number of ways or layers in which you could look at this, right? From a very everyday perspective, it could be seen as, you know, the general populace almost versus the tech companies or the government push for something like this. That's one way of looking at it. Another way of looking at it would be to almost say it's humanity as a whole, right? It's all of us. That it's not so much a versus, but an opportunity to say, hold on a second, what the heck are we doing here, right? And so what you're having is, at that level, right, so not that everyday level, but at that level, you're almost saying there's this emerging feeling within people that it's like, we have to start thinking a little bit more deeply, because I have this feeling of like, where 5G is going and what's happening here, when I look at the totality of our environment, of our health choices, of our food, of all these different things, there's something that's saying we need to stop and think about this for a second. It's sort of like that feeling, not as opposed to, but so much amongst a world that is still operating without that feeling. So it's almost like you have this old world that is operating, which is business first, right? Just go ahead and do it and who cares? And this emerging feeling, that's this contrast, if you will. And so it becomes like, you know, how do I honor, or how do I kind of operate through this feeling that's coming up? And I'm looking at all this stuff happening and I'm going, I don't know how to rectify this feeling within this world that's moving forward. So as a people, where do we have the power? Well, the power is continuing to ask the questions, you know, continuing to change the conversation, continuing to explore not just the technology companies or the government or whoever you want to sort of look at is evil and is greedy and is money hungry. Let's go a little bit deeper. Hold on, they're humans too. How is this process unfolding? Where are we living in this state of being whereby we can't even think about the health of our existence enough to offset choices that threaten our existence? Do you know what I'm saying? To which degree you want to say there's a threat when it comes to 5G is still not entirely clear. But the reality of the situation is it's there. And even, you know, now there's people that are quote unquote a little bit more mainstream in the way they think and the way they view things who are now saying, you know what, I've done the research now with 5G and I'm kind of like, I am concerned. I do believe we should do safety testing. So when it comes back to the power of humanity, to me, one of the big ways that I talk about this is, you know, how do you get powerful people, if you want to call it that, which in this case, we're calling telecom providers, which might involve some of the decision makers at that level. We're talking about politicians who are just sort of saying what they believe should happen as a result of protecting their economy, growing their economy, beating out another country, and so forth. How do we get those powerful individuals? We might throw some congressmen and women in that to that conversation too. How do we get them to care? How do we get them to change? And really, aside from the consciousness end of it, where we're thinking and we're developing a little bit deeper and we're not seeing these people as an enemy, but simply as something else, and we want to help them make a shift, We affect them by changing the conversation. So asking them these deeper questions. It's not so much about a right and a wrong, but about, hey, why are we not questioning, you know, the fact that this could harm our reality? Who's going to take responsibility? Or what happens if we find out 5 years down the road that, yeah, you know what, not only does it do what the preliminary studies are already showing in terms of damage, but it does way more. Who's going to take responsibility for that? What are we going to do about it at that? You know what I'm saying? Like, what about us is making us want to push so hard for this, all in the name of the economy? And the more we have those conversations at a higher level and really get these quote unquote powerful people to start talking outside of just the economy, jobs, you know, talking outside of that, the more I think we're going to force a cultural change. And a cultural change is in some ways a consciousness shift, right? That's a whole conversation on its own. But to me, it's like getting out of these emotions of just like, these people are, we need to fight them and attack them and la-di-da-da, and more into this thing of like, let's join them in their conversation, but let's help change and reshape the conversation. But we got to be coming from a state within ourselves where, yeah, not only do we know it's possible to help impact this stuff, but we got to pull the need. There's a need for the experience of these people, right? They're there saying, hey, we're going to go out and make choices that affect all of society that are destructive to society. Now it's up to you guys to gain self-responsibility. We're playing the role of pushing you to gain self-responsibility because, hey, we're not going to do it, right? You need to become a parent within yourself. It's the child, i.e. society, who's put all the reliance on the parent, i.e. government, policymakers, and so forth, who are then going out and making all these decisions and speaking as though the general public is just the stupid child. So now the child has to grow up and say, why am I putting all my faith and power and everything into this system? Do I even want to play the games that they're playing? Do I want to, what's going on there, right? And that's a whole process. That's a much deeper conversation too, but it's part of this situation, right? To truly end these challenges that we have, it does involve a deeper conversation. Unfortunately, it's not a sort of a quick fix answer, if you want to call it that, you know?
Okay, good. Well, let's get into that, the pain aspect of that conversation just for a moment. From your perspective, what happens if we don't engage? What happens if we stay sort of, Marianne Williamson talks about, like, infantilized, you know, in this adolescent stage where we're just allow ourselves to be talked to like kids. I'm speaking kind of as humanity as a whole. With 5G and what it's connected to, like, what happens if we don't take any responsibility?
We keep repeating the process, and potentially the water gets hotter, right? If you look at where we've been going for the last, you know, very obviously, I'll say the last two decades, obviously things over, you know, the course of time, 100 years, if you want to even just look at it that way, have consistently been getting a little bit more, you know, clamped down, right? But when you look at the last even 20 years since 9/11, if you want to call it that, which technically is a little less than 20, but you see a massive rise in clampdowns within society or within overage of governmental power, of governmental reach, and so forth. Almost as if to say, right? Because if we're going to talk about this on a deeper level, right? We're talking about this on a, okay, humanity needs to grow up. That's plain and simple, right? We look at the degradation of our environment, for example, right? You could say that our environment, when it comes to planet Earth, and you could also say that the means by which we are also intoxicating ourselves, okay? So this is food, water, technologies, and so forth that are getting a little bit over the edge. When you look at those two factors, it's starting to threaten, if you will, the existence of us. Now, this isn't to create this big fear scenario where it's like, oh my God, we're going into this, we're about to kill ourselves, and we're going to self-destruct and la-da-da. We're not going to go there because we're having these conversations. This is coming up. This is coming up in a big way. And the question is do you want to keep saying, oh, okay, yeah, government will kind of take care of it? You know, I talk about this with CO2 and the environment. We're talking more about CO2, which is a big scientific fight and debate, versus just talking about the degradation and pollution and the fact that it's the system that we operate within that is creating all this degradation and pollution. And we're trying to say that a tax, a CO2, a carbon tax, is going to come in and solve it. Hold on a second. We're not talking about the right thing here. This makes no sense, right? So it's in these states of how hot does the water need to get before you start going through the process of waking up and saying, I'm not just going to wake up and revolt because that's just a child throwing a temper tantrum. I'm going to wake up as a child, become mature, learn about what's going on in my reality, become an adult, and sort of move from there, right? And I think that is the process. So to answer again the original question through all of that is really just to say, what happens if we don't grow up, if we don't, like I say, the water keeps getting hotter. The times out there keep getting more intense, getting more chaotic, because those chaotic times is a mirror and there's a light, and the light is shining on the subject, say the person, and the mirror is there, and the more you can already see yourself, oh, but you can't see it clear enough, let's turn the light up more, right? Oh, I can see clearer and clearer and clearer. So how much do you need to see that the one that needs to change is a person in the mirror, which is all of humanity as a whole. And that's the process. You know, how hard or how difficult does it need to get necessarily, right? It's up to us.
Yeah. Do you see, we're you know, reaching towards that critical mass. There's enough collective, you know, intention of enough people that really want to to wake up and transform? Are you optimistic?
I have been for a lot of years, and I still am now. I mean, probably since 10 years ago when I first started to really dive into the exploration of consciousness as it relates to our real reality. And I say that because a lot of times when people think about consciousness or spirituality or the metaphysics, if you will, they relate that to a sort of an airy fairy that has no place in real reality, whereas we've never approached it that way since day one. It's always been understanding our reality through its totality as opposed to just looking at the material, right? What is quantum physics saying about the energetic nature, i.e. the energy behind everything, about our reality, and how can we look at that and relate that to our world? And so for me, the more I studied that, the more I looked at that, the more I saw not only what the science is showing, but what the intuition is saying, what the senses that we have within ourselves are saying, the more I feel, hey, yeah, there's definitely something changing. There's no reason to be fearful. Yes, there is some chaos. Yes, there is some challenge going on out there, but those are learning lessons. And in humanity's current state, which does not have to be this way, but in humanity's current state, it's like when you're a kid going through school, right? You wait till the last minute to do all the things for that one exam or one assignment that you got to turn in, right? It's all about waiting to the last minute, right? But when you grow up, you realize, no, I got to plan out my time. I don't need to wait till the last minute. I'm going to work on the project slowly over time, and whatever, we'll get it done, and it won't be as much of a panic, and I won't be forced to have to act. But when you're still operating in this sort of infantile state of being, you need chaos. You need a really intense experience in order to get yourself to move and to get yourself to finish something, right? So we don't have to need, we don't need chaos as humanity to evolve, to change, to move forward. We're just playing that out right now. And so it's the idea of, yeah, you know, that water is getting hot, that things are turning up because it's pushing that evolution. But, you know, there's no need to fear and worry because that's why this conversation is happening. At least that's how I feel. I know sometimes people will, and this is the challenge I would even put. It's like, close your eyes, you know, go to a quiet space for a moment, take a bunch of deep breaths, really disconnect for a second. Intend that you disconnect from the news, the computer, your cell phone for a second. Just breathe within yourself. Very simple tools that we all have. Breathe within yourself, and then just ask yourself the question when you feel yourself being a little quieter. You know, are we really headed towards destruction? Or are we going through a process of change? And if you take the time and, you know, 15, 20 minutes and you really disconnect, you really feel within yourself, you really get that sort of innate feeling that you have, I'm going to throw it out there that you'll probably find that there is no real reason to panic, yet there is a reason to act. There is a push to act, to shift yourself, to change the conversation, to move forward with things. But I've never really had the feeling that, you know, yeah, we're going towards destruction. You know what I'm saying?
So, Joe, you have a podcast. I think episode 5 of that podcast was brilliant. When I listened to that, you nailed it. You're talking about 5G, the Trump administration, QAnon, and narratives, right? And how we can really elevate. Can you tell us, let's dive into that. Tell us about your perspective on narratives and how important it is to not get bound up in a certain, you know, limited understanding or limited hangout, whether it's you know, but I guess they all have to do with separation, don't they? So how can we identify the narratives? What narratives do you identify that are really like running too much of the show right now? And how can we come to a clear understanding of truth and empowerment?
For sure, yeah. I mean, one of the easiest, most relatable ways to discuss this is, let's say, for example, right now there's a presidential election coming up in the United States, you know, as we near 2020. So the campaigning begins, the news cycle begins, and everybody, you know, that all starts. And we break things down oftentimes into, and I'll be really current, right? You have your sort of establishment Democrats, if you will, your more independent Democrats, your independent Republicans, your establishment Republicans, and your kind of your independents in general, right? And these different people that represent the different boxes, right? We'll call them boxes. You're now going to have stories or media speaking through different narratives as it relates to each one of these boxes. So if CNN is covering something, you're going to get the establishment left. If Fox is covering something, you're probably going to get the establishment right. And so that's an example of, from an everyday perspective, of how you get narratives. Now, narratives also go into the alternative, right? So now alternative media sometimes has narratives where, well, it's alternative, so it may be independent left or it may be independent right. Sometimes it's still establishment left and right, but it's a lot more rare within alternative media. Not only that, but you can then go alternative, we'll say even further, and start getting into various deeper, I will say, understandings that are somewhat factual, where you're looking at there's a shadow government. There's something behind the scenes that is sort of controlling what political figures are doing anyway. And so you start to get that narrative, which you're touching on truth, but if you're not careful, it becomes a narrative. Similar to the Q intel, if you will. Well, here you have, and I'm not saying for sure that this is legit or not legit, but this is what's happening. You have drops of information that are coming that people are engaging with and trying to make a picture out of. So they're becoming citizen journalists to an extent. Now, if you're not careful, looking at things through that becomes a narrative, right? So you have all these narratives. What is the mechanism that causes us to want to identify with the narratives, but then also like really just get rigidly emotionally stuck in those narratives? What's that mechanism? Well, it's perhaps the ego, right? We start identifying, we see ourselves and who we are in whatever one of these narratives. You may be a person that started out, let's just say, in the establishment left or right, that one day saw, you know, something about 9/11 per se. This is a real story for a lot of people. And they said, oh man, I'm going to question my narrative now. So you started to question and you may have said, ooh, okay, it's not about the left and the right. There's a shadow government that controls them both. Okay, cool. So now your narrative becomes over here, alternative community, whatever, all that sort of stuff. And so you're looking at things through that. And then slowly, as you got out of one box, you start to put yourself in another box. And then if you're not careful, that becomes another box you get stuck in, right? And so you'll hear people all the time saying, they'll throw the baby out with the bathwater. So they'll be like, oh, well, you know, NASA can't possibly ever have a whistleblower because everybody at NASA is corrupted. Or, you know, this news anchor who left and is now a whistleblower about mainstream media, that can't be the case because they come from mainstream media. So you throw the baby out with the bathwater. Everything becomes a part of your alternative narrative. And what you'll start to notice is that no matter what narrative you get in, like let's say the alternative one, a lot of people who get stuck in that are now saying, oh, well, the mainstream media could never tell the truth because the deep state, if you will, always has control. But hold on a second. If you're trying to wake up people, if you're trying to offer people a different perspective, it means that there's an opportunity for change. So here you have this opportunity, but paradoxically, you're saying that it could never change because the mainstream media is always going to be who they are. So what's the point of doing what you're doing, right? So you get stuck in that narrative. And so now all of a sudden you have Trump, right, who's come in as this alleged outsider, right? And it appears to be the case to some extent, right? What does that mean, being an outsider? Well, he doesn't seem to fit the bill of an establishment Republican, where it's just pushing through business as usual, the media loves and is going to promote them. Yeah, there's going to be a few stations that, you know, kind of dislike what they're doing, your classic left-right narratives. But this is different. Republicans don't like Trump, classical Republicans, if you will. Democrats aren't liking Trump because of the all-out war the mainstream media has on what he's doing. So you start to see, okay, well, there's a different thing that's happening here. Well, then in comes this whole Q conversation that says, well, Trump's part of this whole thing of he's going to save the world, right? This is the narrative. He's going to save the world. He's going to save the world. He's going to save the world. Well, what does save the world mean? Let's say, let's go under the assumption that Q is what people say that it is, which is a group of military individuals that have long left the military that are organizing to help a quote-unquote alliance. Overthrow a deep state government and bring power back to humanity, right? Well, do these military individuals necessarily come from a state of being or a state of consciousness where they're going to create this beautiful world for everybody? Or might they be coming from a space where, yeah, sure, let's kind of pull out the deep state, but yeah, let's still go with the economy. Let's still go with, you know, blowing up technology and doing all these amazing things. We still need to have war. We still need to have armies because we do still need to protect ourselves, right, from all the bad guys out there. Maybe we won't be making up as many bad guys as what happens in our current world, but, you know, we still need to protect. So the point is what does that even mean to save the world? What does that even mean to... what does the world look like when you pull out that deep state? So the narrative there has become everything Trump does has to be amazing. It must be good. So now all of a sudden Trump's pushing 5G and people stuck in that narrative are going, well, I got to find a way to make this seem like a positive. Yeah. But is it necessary? Like, hold on a sec. Let's step back again. Let's say Trump is pushing 5G. Just because he's trying to pull out the deep state doesn't mean that Trump's not all for an economy and technology and tons of jobs and doing all these things that it may hurt humanity technologically. Maybe he's not privy to that information. So now you have people saying, well, they're creating a safe form of 5G. We have no evidence that that exists. Yet we're stuck in that narrative. And again, what we're going back to from child, the infantile state, to taking responsibility of self as humanity, is where you step up and you see, okay, I saw that there's a part of myself that wants to identify, to become something, to say, I'm Republican, I'm awake, if you're in the QAnon sort of community, I'm awake, right? Well, what does awake mean, right? And this is where it starts to get a little bit deeper in terms of questioning. If you're stuck in a narrative, you're not awake. You may have a bit of a wider lens of what happens, but you're still stuck. It's when we don't identify and we allow all information to be fluid and all information to fill out a picture that we're not trying to make into something, but that we're allowing it to become self-evident, then you become non-attached to what you're trying to do. You're not trying to protect an identity you have. You're instead just seeing what plays out. Now, this is a tricky thing for people to do because for a long time, we've been wanting to just be like, okay, now I'm over here. Okay, now I'm over here. And now I'm over here, now I'm over here. And so, don't get me wrong. I see this as a process that's gonna take a little bit of time, takes a little bit of, you know, self-mastery, really playing into why am I having the thoughts I'm having? Okay, what's going on here? Why am I trying to identify? Why does what I put on Facebook, why does it have to identify me? Now that something has changed, can I admit that I might have been wrong? You know, all these challenges now that really represent personal issues or personal challenges that we have, right? So protecting a narrative is really oftentimes protecting oneself and one's own ego.
Interesting, yeah. So protecting the narrative, what it means to me perhaps is or maybe why I feel inclined to do that is because I want to feel safe and I want to be part of something bigger, right? So it seems like we externalize that. We have a sort of an ego-based structure, like rather than what's the alternative, Joe? What's the alternative? How can we actually have true safety and truly be part of something bigger? You're talking about this shift from adolescence to, you know, to responsibility, right?
Yeah, and it's the reality that, don't get me wrong, what I'm about to say is a bit of a tough one at first to sort of fully internalize, if you will. The reality is we're always safe, right? And the other part to that was safety. And what was the other part that you wanted?
Being part of something bigger than.
Right. So we're always part of something, and we are always safe. And when I say that, what I'm saying is, if you were to look at the reality of the situation from a quantum perspective, right? The inherent nature of our reality in us is that we are all connected, no matter what distance, to everything. We're part of a one ocean that no matter whether you take a drop from here and then move it miles and miles away and drop it in the ocean somewhere else, it's still part of the same whole. That is the inherent nature of everything. The challenge is our everyday lives, we feel disconnected from that. there's a number of reasons why we can look at that, but we feel disconnected from that because of our lack of awareness, our lack of consciousness of who we truly are. We've gotten caught in this mode of being so distracted, so focused on the material, so focused on work and this and that and bills and blah, blah, all these different things, that we've forgotten who we truly are, and that we've identified just as a mind walking around within a meat suit, having an experience and just, you know, doing that sort of thing. So, right? So when you step back from that, i.e. meditation, right, where you start going back, oftentimes you hear people who are meditating, they were like, wow, you know what? I came in off the street into this meditation class, and after, you know, 30, 40 minutes, I started to feel like I was one with everything. This is a common thing that happens. Well, what happened there? The mind began to slowly pull itself out of the robotic state that it's in. Your awareness of who you truly are starts to become a little bit more prevalent in your awakened consciousness, meaning just you walking around, and you started to realize, wow, I feel connected to everything, because that's your natural state. And people who continue to practice this type of stuff bring that natural state into their waking lives on a regular basis. Which is why people walk around and they don't seem like a walking mind or a walking ego. It feels like there's a little bit more there. Now, it's not to then go and judge and say, well, the people who are walking around a little bit more robotically are somehow bad. Well, no, they're on their own journey, their own process. They're going to have the same experience of opening things up, and we're there, people there to help them go through that process and journey, because guess what? That's how humanity grows up, right? And so there's the interconnected bit. Now, the safety bit, again, comes from that same feeling. When you're in that state, you start to recognize there's nothing to protect. There's nothing to, oh my God, this. Sure, there's a, what you could say, a bodily or a primal sort of function that we have within ourselves, whereby if we're presented with a Tyrannosaurus Rex in front of us, or a guy with a gun, whatever, and he's pointing it at our head.
Or a small cell tower out front of our house.
Right? Right? We may have some fear within the body that comes up for a moment, but it's a bodily fear to move yourself out of that particular danger, right? For that particular moment. But in terms of actual safety, you'll realize you can say to yourself, oh, well, I'm looking for safety. How many people they're walking down the street, they're healthy. I think it was a prominent soccer goalie, world-class goalie, just the other day had a heart attack, right? You think, okay, here's a guy who eats well, is, you know, making probably at this point hundreds of millions of dollars because it's soccer, exercising all the time, still has a heart attack. Well, was he preventing himself? Was he staying safe from a health perspective? You start to realize when you look at the situation, when you play out the stories that we have about safety, you start to realize, what are we trying to be safe from? You know what I'm saying? It becomes this thing. It's like something could happen at any moment. And that isn't something to fear. It's a recognition of like, hey, that's not where our focus is supposed to be. Our focus is, if you stay back to who you truly are, you realize you're safe in each moment. Everything's as it sort of needs to be. But when you recognize, hey, you know what? These 5G cell towers are going in. You say, well, why are we doing this? And then you become active, not from a standpoint of fear of safety, but from this standpoint, because if you're doing from fear of safety, you're going to panic, you're going to fight, you're going to attack. And when you come from that state, which is, to be honest, it's an unconscious state of recognition of something going on, you're going to be met back with the same thing. People are going to fight you. You walk into a room and there's tension, you become a little bit tense. You walk into a room and there's peace, you recognize that and you're almost like, oh, you slowly fall into that peace. Everyone's had that experience before, which means everyone has, for the most part, a mechanism within themselves, which the HeartMath Institute has helped us understand is our heart and the electromagnetic field that comes from that heart, which is understandable by the brain. Everyone has this mechanism where you can sense energetically what's going on, and you can connect with that, and you can feel what's, you know, these different things. So if you're, why does coming in with fear attacking a situation end with more fear, and more, you create that cycle, and then there's more attack back? Well, because we can feel that. people can feel, people can sense that you're sending out that information, right? So to be in a conscious state, recognizing, hey, you know what, I'm fine, I'm whole and complete within myself, I got to get rid of these fear stories, then you take that and you go and you impact your environment, you impact your local community, you impact your provincial or state government, you impact your federal government, but you're not coming in there, this is horrible and what you're doing and all this boom, 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 right? Then they're going to get offended. You guys are irresponsible Congress people. They get offended. They go on the defensive, right? Because that's how we're programmed to do things. But then all of a sudden you're coming, hey, you know, I recognize you're a man or woman, you're a parent, you're whatever you may be. Recognize that you may not be have access to the information. Here's some information. Here's what's going on. Here's how I feel about it. They're going to be like, whoa. And they're going to listen. And that's how people are impacting local communities. And I know you know a lot about that.
So it's us accepting and stepping into responsibility and accountability for ourselves. We can still bring that to elected reps and utility execs. We still, I believe we still, it's our responsibility to bring that. But like you say, not from a place of jumping on that, like from immediate judgment, immediate, like full on projection of they are the problem and we are the innocent, right? It's so, like, perhaps we're all, you know, there's a microcosm that's happening within us. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is this what you're saying? Like, we can shift the outer reality because we are connected with the all. And so when we make those interchanges as the microcosm, then when we come from that place and have those conversations and send those emails to our elected reps and phone calls, for example, then that has a different effect because we are sharing the responsibility and the accountability with them. Is that, have I got
absolutely
that right?
Absolutely. Yeah, and it, you know, to people will talk about, you know, there's a couple ways to look at this, right? People will talk about, oh, you got to shift your consciousness, right? And then the consciousness will affect the world. And people will look at that and they'll say, okay, well, that sounds like you're being passive, that you're not going to act, that you're going to sit there and meditate and you're going to do your thing and whatever and let it out. It's like, well, hold on. We didn't come to this planet to not engage with one another. We didn't come to this planet to not co-create a reality that has a material element to it, i.e., you know, stuff we build, put together, do this, that, whatever. Let it. We didn't come to the planet to not experience that. We came to experience that. What is the underlying state of being that we want to bring into that creation, and what will that state of being ultimately create? When you see the creation and you come back from the other end and say, okay, here's what it created, how can I now go and create something different? Well, I have to change the state of being. Right? So what this really looks like in a very simple, where you're merging the physical world and the metaphysical world into what's actually happening, is before you go impact, before you go have your conversation with your congresswoman, congressman, local government, whoever it may be, telecom, la-da-da-da, you're changing your state of being. You're creating a new environment, a new energetic environment that is not about a push and pull, a dual us versus them, but that's about coming from a different point of view. So what happens is you shifted your consciousness, which you then took into a situation which created a new environment that actually was ripe for change to occur. Right? And I'm not talking about change where, okay, yeah, you know, we decided to not do 5G in this area. I'm talking about all of a sudden, you brought something to those people into that situation that starts to create a framework in society, because it compounds, that starts to not just say 5G needs to be questioned, but that starts to say the underlying questioning was, why are we operating in a way where we do something that destroys us? And the more we expand that, the more you start creating a whole society around that, because guess what? You shifted the initial foundation. And so now it's like, well, there's the 5G fight, then after the 5G fight, there's the whatever fight, then after that fight, there's the what? No, it starts to collapse the future fights because there's a different state of being. There's a different state of awareness that's happening here, right? So that's how the consciousness shifts the reality. There's a shift which creates the action and it continues.
Yeah, that's so good, Joe. Just as we wrap up here, I'm getting this huge energetic hit on needing to share this. The film that came out last year about the documentary about Mr. Rogers, about Fred Rogers, the childhood educator, the children's show host for decades. That scene where he's did you see that? That scene where
he's not yet. He's been wanting to.
Okay. I encourage everyone to, after you watch it, you'll thank me. Right now you're like, what is he talking about? But go watch this clip, look it up. The scene where he's needing funding because his show is under attack, it's being threatened, it could be shut down, and he is the pioneer for compassion-based children's television, right? Like, he's the guy, he's the pioneer. So when he's talking with this high-level government official who has the power to defund and shut him down, how he speaks and the place from which he comes, that heart-centered compassion place, you can just feel it for a few minutes. You're just right in there. There's this sort of heart and mind meld. You can sense that the person in the position of power, who at the start of the conversation was very, stoic and like businesslike, at the end of that conversation, Joe, it's amazing. Fred Rogers gets his funding, and it begins to open up from that moment on. This new way of empowering, inspiring children on television, and he goes on to, reach millions and millions of kids in this country. But I was just so strongly reminded of that, because when I saw that clip, I just had this visceral reaction from a heart-based, you could say, visceral reaction of, oh yeah, that's the way that we need to communicate. So right. We're not lying down. We're not begging. We're not, pulling back and doing meditations all day and withdrawing. But we're coming from a place where we're expressing the commonality and including in a bigger context, a bigger information that is disarming at the very core of it.
Absolutely.
Disarming to those which if we didn't use that, might be positioned more strongly as our adversary.
For sure. What you start to recognize is, in that moment, he's actually empowered, right? Not the illusion of empowerment, which to humanity's current consciousness we picture as, the man or woman standing on top of the cliff with the sword in hand and a shield, like, I'm ready to fight. That's the illusion. That's the story, right? The real empowerment is like Neo from The Matrix. When he's standing in that hallway and the three agents shoot, a whole bunch of bullets at him, and he's just there, calm, puts out his hand and stops it, picks it up, looks at it. What is this that you're trying to do? Drops it, right? That's empowerment, and that's where we're going. Sorry, just slightly emotional. It's just the idea, we want to fight. Do you know what I'm saying? We want to, think that it's about fighting, and it's not, right? It's this idea of you're just recognizing who you truly are, and it's in that state that we actually have the power to do something, to make a difference, right? And in the Mr. Rogers example, what is our world designed to do? Disconnect people. Everyone knows this. Look at social media, look at the phones, look at the food, look at the water. Look at the way we're disconnected from our environment. Everyone can recognize that it's about disconnection. So why would you take a disconnected state to an elected official, to another human being, and say, from a disconnected state, which is, I gotta fight you, why would you do that? Well, you're just reflecting the world as it is. Versus if you take a connected state where you deprogram from that everyday reality, and you go, doesn't matter how stoic and cold that congressman or woman is at that moment, by the end of your little 5-minute speech, you've reconnected humanity in that one spot. And no one can deny that. And that's what changes people.
That has a ripple effect, right? Like we're each, like how you described how we're each connected at our core in this quantum realm, it it goes out, right? That moment in time, that one communication.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what it's about.
Thank you, brother. I was feeling I was feeling emotional there too. I'm a bit of an empath. So, thank you for bringing that. And just as we wrap up here, I'm going to put you on the spot. So you talked about, you know, that meditation, pulling back, withdrawing, connecting to the real within us, and then coming from that place. What are three concrete steps that you would recommend that people could use to actualize that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to kind of go with three things that I use as part of protocols that I share with other people and so forth. And it's essentially, you know, meditation is good. Meditation can show up in many forms. So I want to say this from the standpoint of you don't necessarily have to do it in a traditional sort of way. There's a lot of different things that are meditative for different people. But, you know, whatever it is that allows you, when speaking about meditation, to sort of quiet things down, to get out of the everyday sort of robotic nature of work, repetition of, you know, whatever, habits, you know, phone, distraction, people, all these sorts of things. Sometimes it's as simple as making sure you have like 30 minutes of time a day where it's just you, where there's nothing else going on, right? And that allows you to sort of, every now and then, get back into who you are. It's like when you go to a camping trip for a couple days, and if it's not the kind of camping trip where you got, you know, beer and la-di-da-di-da and everyone's partying and whatever, but, you know, a kind that's more just out in nature, right? You notice you have like this, wow, like I feel like refreshed, you know, sort of feeling. That is a very powerful thing to sort of start breaking some of the patterns and habits, getting out of some of the automatic fear states, the worry states, the fight states, and kind of just like having a bigger perspective. Along with that, I like the idea of creating a little bit more presence now, because presence starts to create a space. It starts to create time where you're feeling more self-aware, right? Which is going to be the third part. But it creates this spot where you're a little bit more like, all right, I'm here, you know? I'm paying attention to right now. And to do that in a very simple way, I just tell people, you know, if you're not good with remembering, just create an alarm on your phone for every like 4 hours. You know, just a quick little thing that comes up. And it's as simple as, you know, stop, you know, just close your eyes for just a second. You can leave your eyes open, whatever it needs to be, but your focus and intention goes back to let it go. You know, take a few deep breaths. Let your shoulders just relax. Let your jaw muscles, let it all relax. Let it all just come back to present. What are you hearing around you? What do you feel around you? What do you sense and smell and all these sorts of things? Just, again, presence, which goes back to that meditative state to some extent again, right? And then the final thing is self-awareness. Now, self-awareness is going to come as a result of these things. Self-awareness is, you know, why did I think what I thought in that particular instance, in that particular situation? Before I even judge somebody, I catch myself. I was just about to judge that person. And you get better. It's a muscle that builds, right? You get better with recognizing, oh, I was about to say that. When that energy of wanting to do something sort of starts to rise within yourself, you notice it and you catch yourself before it happens. And eventually, you start understanding what that energy, with whatever situation it is, what that feeling is, so much so that it just starts to dissipate because it doesn't need to be there any longer because you became self-aware of it, right? And so that self-awareness also extends out into how I affect people around me, how I affect my environment, how I now change my actions, right? So all of a sudden now you've been gaining this greater sense of who you are. You're naturally going to be seeing through certain narratives within the media that are like, oh, hold on. I'm kind of seeing a little bit more to that than I saw before. Not only that, but now I'm seeing why it's triggering me in certain ways. Why is that triggering me? You're asking these questions, right? Self-awareness is about being aware of the mechanisms that oftentimes autonomously operate through you that don't need to autonomously operate through you. Things like emotions and anger and so forth that just sort of spew out of you and that we justify because that person wronged me. But it's subjectively, that person may not have wronged you. Not only that, you didn't need to react that way. All of a sudden, I start seeing that I've given my power away to just these autonomous emotions and so forth, right? So self-awareness, it changes in a lot of different things. And I think there's a good little set of practice to sort of get there. And of course, this isn't by no means, you know, going to solve everything. This is like, you know, just getting on that path, getting on that journey, starting to pay attention. And you'll notice you'll be sort of guided, if you want to call it that. You'll start seeing, you'll find the right book, you'll have these certain conversations, and the journey will keep expanding, and that self-responsibility, that self-action, and so forth will start to arise within yourself, and you'll be making physical changes within the world from a new state of being. That's really what it's all about.
Right on. Thank you, Joe. Where can people tap into your work and be part of your community?
For sure. So we're on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and so forth, even though there's, you know, a lot of censorship that goes on in every single one of those platforms. We are there. You can just search Collective Evolution on any of them, and you'll be able to find them. Collective-evolution.com is where we put a lot of our media. So we got articles coming out every day, videos, and a podcast every Tuesday and Thursday. We also do original shows. We do a news show, as well as we do interviews on a platform called CETV. It's essentially like a Netflix, but for like alternative media and news and all those types of conversations. You know, that's our way of sort of moving away from these censorship engines and into a place where we're kind of more self-responsible and in control of a platform that we can kind of just do whatever we need to do completely censorship-free. So that's what that's all about.
Excellent. Joe Martino, my friend, thank you for being part of the 5G Summit.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.